Welcome to the Sinister Sisters podcast. I'm Felicia.
I'm Lauren.
We're best friends.
And we like spooky stuff.
Oh, yeah. Do you have recommendations for this week?
I do. I have some new ones. I can go first. I mean, they're not real horror movies, but
that's okay.
In preparation for the new John Wick movie, James has me watching all the John Wick movies.
Oh my, what?
I mean,
what are those?
Have you ever seen them?
They're action movies? No.
So they are not for me.
Okay.
I can appreciate them from the standpoint of like, basically the two guys that, I think like the two guys that directed it maybe, or like created it, the whole thing, are like stunt guys that created this whole new, basically like choreography version of doing stunt stuff that like I can objectively look at and be like, okay, this is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
The stunt stuff is better than ever. So I should say too, you know, for better or for worse, I feel like I've really come around to Nicolas Cage like as an actor and like have gotten more on board.
Oh yeah.
I can't say the same about Keanu Reeves. I've heard that everyone says he's super nice, and I can see like he got into like amazing shape for these movies. He learned how to do all these stunts. Like all of that part is so cool.
But it's not enough for Lauren. It's not enough.
He's just so wooden to me as an actor. Like he'll be like, and this will be my next line. And I'm like, what? Like, yeah. Why are we spending time with him? Like, it's just.
Yeah.
It just doesn't do it for me. And I feel like in The Matrix, it's like as a bit, or not as a bit, but like you get it why he's that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel like when he's in regular movies, I really don't get it. And in John Wick, it's like, okay, he's like a badass hitman and he's gone through a lot of trauma. And like, mm-hmm. I get it kind of, but the other performances are just so much more interesting to me. Like there's, I don't know, Willem Dafoe is in the first one and he's really amazing always.
Yeah,
he's great. Actually playing a good guy for once in his
life.
Oh,
wild.
I know, edgy, right? But like there is like, yeah, I can watch it and be like, wow, this is like objectively impressive stunt work. I don't know if we've talked about this. I think we've talked about it on the podcast. I'm really sensitive to gun violence post-2020.
Interesting. I didn't know that, Lauren.
Yeah. I like it like really bothers me. And I think because I've probably consumed so much more news and gun stuff in the news than ever before.
Yeah.
But it's like it's very hard for me to watch and it like really unsettles me. And so there are some times that I have to like close my eyes or I don't know, look away.
Yeah. Like, it's so real. It's so like we're watching it happening all around us. So it's like it's hard to fictionalize it.
And it's so messed up of me, right? Like I can watch horror movies where like people are being tortured and it doesn't bother me in the same way.
Yeah.
Like I don't know what it is. I think I could like look at horror movies gore and be like, wow, this is like how they did it. This is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
This is in like some heightened reality. But like just like shooting a man from like 2 feet away, I'm like, ugh, can't do it.
Yeah, no, it's just so much more realistic because it's like that feels like something that could happen to you or like to your loved ones because it happens.
Yeah, and it's just like done. Like it's like just shooting random people and I'm just like, ugh, I can't.
Yeah.
So it's been hard to watch. Yeah, I think I think like you can look at it and say like, all those like things that I said, like it is like an impressive feat in stunt work. And like, I do think it's really cool because stunt actors, I think, are definitely short end of the stick a lot of the time, or like people don't realize what they do. So I'm really like impressed by them, like having this whole successful movie franchise, like basically just about stunts.
Yeah. But that's wild.
Yeah, not my favorite franchise. And then the only other thing I have to recommend is I've just been watching trash TV. And I think it's like a weird coping mechanism for being stressed out. But I've been watching The Bachelor this season and I have been watching Love is Blind, which is just hilarious and dramatic and ridiculous.
I love that.
That's great. Yeah, I think it's like too, like there is something about like watching these people and being like, man, I have my life so much more together. I'm doing fine.
Yeah. Oh my God. I totally feel that. So last week I recommended a nap, and this week I will recommend an activity that is, I think it's probably going to blow your mind that I did this. But so, I have no time to watch anything right now. But I went to our friend Matt's house on Saturday, and I, for the first time, played Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh my God. How did you bury the lead?
I don't know. I kind of forgot because I'm just tired. But yeah. It was fun. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. So his roommate was like the dungeon master and like did a really good job like building the story. And I'd never done that before. So like I walked in not knowing anything. But she had done like a lot of work on it. And then my character was like Tilden, this like elf queen.
Love.
And it was fun. Like on like I was still like I'm still like sort of confused about all the rules and stuff. And like the dice and like things like that. But it was overall like a pretty fun experience. It was so different than like anything I've ever done.
Yeah. How much acting is it? Like 90% or like 20?
So you can like do stuff in character, or you can like say it like a story, like, and then my character did this. And it's kind of like you'll say like my character's gonna do this, and then like the dungeon master will be like, okay, to succeed in doing that you have to roll this number, to fail in doing that you have to roll this number, blah blah. And so I don't know, but it was very interesting. It was fun, and it was like, so it's like very playful, like it's like very imaginative. Yeah. Play as like an adult, which was cool.
I love that. I think that's so sweet. I've never done it. My little brother did it for a while with his improv group, or like a lot of his like improv alumni friends, and he had so much fun. Like he said it was like a theater outlet.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I don't know, overall it was fun. Yeah, I still need to figure out some of the rules and like, but I think I'm gonna go back and do it again, because I think it's like you're supposed to go back and like continue the quest.
I was gonna say, are you guys like doing like a regular thing, or
it's just gonna be like, it's not gonna be weekly or anything, but like I think we're gonna like try to find another time at some point to come back together.
I love that. So, that's so sweet. I'm so happy for you. I also, very very quick, just because I never read books, I did read a book. I can't remember if you gave it to me, but I read Then She Was Gone.
Oh my God, so good.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think I gave that to you. I don't think
so. Oh no. Then maybe it was my aunt. I thought it was so interesting and good.
Yeah.
It's that's,
I love all those type of like what I call domestic thriller books.
Yes.
But I love that stuff. Yeah.
That's such a good way of putting it. For anybody, yeah, it's basically about a girl that goes missing and kind of her mom's quest to figure out what happened to her.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's a good one.
But I couldn't put it down, which never happens with me.
Yeah. There's a book that I started reading on my vacation, but I haven't finished it, which is The Paris Apartment, which is like a girl shows up to visit her brother and he's missing. And I haven't finished it, but it's will I finish it one day? Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe. I think you will.
One day. Okay. All right. I'm gonna go for it. So
do it.
Today I'm talking about the cursed film set of Rosemary's Baby. So it's not it's not necessarily a lot of things that happened on set, but more things that happened after the end of the filming. But if you've never seen it, Rosemary's Baby is a horror film from 1968 about a pregnant woman that moves into a Manhattan apartment building with her husband, and the neighbors are members of a satanic cult that are basically trying to groom her to use her baby for a satanic ritual, where basically I think it's like the her husband or fiance, no, husband wanted to have a successful film career, so he like was like, you can have my baby if you give me a successful film career.
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, came out in 1968. It stars Mia Farrow, who's amazing in it, and is directed by the evil Roman Polanski, who is not allowed to come back to America anymore. But we'll get into some of that in a bit. But it's based on a book by Ira Levin from 1967. And as soon as the book came out, it was a bestseller. And William Castle, notorious horror film producer, picked up the rights immediately. And the movie came out in 68. So it was a pretty fast turnaround. I think he had initially wanted to direct it himself, but then he had Roman Polanski do the screenplay and direct it. Roman Polanski at the time was married to Sharon Tate. And obviously we're going to get into her tragedy briefly. Oof. But he had wanted her to star in the film. But William Castle was like, it has to be Mia Farrow. She is the one. And so they eventually hired Mia Farrow, who was, this is like, so like Hollywood, all these things. But basically she was married to Frank Sinatra at the time. This is like, do you know any of the story?
I didn't know that they were ever married. I didn't know that Mia Farrow and Frank were married.
Yeah, it's like freaking crazy. Like her whole life story is really wild. So she was married to Frank Sinatra in 1968. And when she got this movie, he read the script. He was like, I don't think this is a good fit for you. I want you to do this movie with me instead. And so she's like, I want to do both. So she signs on to both movies, her movie and whatever Frank Sinatra movie was happening at the time. And she's kind of, the Rosemary's Baby shoot was first and it took longer than expected. So she was trying to go back and forth and it was putting a big strain on their new marriage. And so Frank Sinatra was like, it's me or the movie, babe. And she was like, I'm picking the movie.
Honestly, amazing.
Yes. So the Frank Sinatra, I mean, he did. I mean, it's just so mean. So he served her divorce papers while she was on set. He had someone bring them onto the set, like while she's freaking doing something. And was like, yeah, you're getting a divorce. Congratulations. Here you go. And she signed the papers
people
that day.
Serving the divorce papers is a messy
job?
Thing, apparently.
Oh, my
like,
God.
Like Olivia Wilde doing it to... Or no, Jason Sudeikis doing it to Olivia Wilde at her premiere.
That crazy. Is so insane. People are insane. Okay. Anyways. So yeah. So that was a bit of drama that happened on the set itself. And now we're going to go to things that happened after the movie came out. So obviously the movie's about satanic worshipers, whatever. And so the first thing we have to talk about is the murder of Sharon Tate by the Manson family. So this is like, you can watch hundreds of documentaries and videos and podcasts about this murder. So I'm not really going to go into it too much. But Sharon Tate was pregnant with Roman Polanski's child and was home while he was out of town with a few friends. And some of the Manson family broke in and brutally murdered them. And also, not that they were, so they also like used some, this is going to come back later. They wrote like Helter Skelter on the wall in blood and just like made this like huge, horrible scene. So it's a very, very dark story. If you want to look more into it, you certainly can. But it's very bad. So that happened. And I brought up the Helter Skelter thing because another thing that happened was the apartment building that they filmed Rosemary's Baby at was also the location where John Lennon was assassinated.
And so bad there's choice like, of location.
Yeah, it's just like this weird connection of like the Manson family using the Helter Skelter song.
Yeah.
And killing the wife of Rosemary's Baby's director. And then John Lennon being killed at the place where that movie was filmed is like a, just a weird I mean, I'm sure it's all a coincidence, but it's just crazy.
Definitely.
Yeah. So also the film composer, Christophe Commandeur, just a few months after finishing his work on the movie, fell off a cliff in Los Angeles and suffered a cerebral hemorrhage and went into a coma and died. So that's a dark one. And William Castle, the producer, he started getting all of this hate mail and such about the satanic stuff and Rosemary's Baby and like how could he produce this movie and all this stuff. And he eventually developed these like really, really bad kidney stones. And while he was in surgery, he hallucinated and was shouting, "Rosemary, for God's sake, drop that knife," which is insane.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so, and he had like all of this fear around Rosemary's Baby and even has talked in recent years about like not necessarily regretting making the movie, but the movie also came out and then the kind of like satanic panic happened in the following years. And I don't know. I think people made him feel responsible for some of that by putting out this movie. Yeah. So the writer of the novel, Year 11, he, you know, had obviously great success with the novel and then the movie coming out. But eventually his life started to crumble after the movie was released. So the same year the movie came out, his wife left him and he started getting all of these, I guess, threatening-ish message from people like in support of the Catholic Church. And he was like, he put out these statements saying like, "I don't believe in witches or Satanism. I just wrote this book." And yeah, people were not happy. So his life kind of fell apart. And then the last thing, and I'm not really going to go into this because it's mostly just, once again, it's like one of those things that if you want to know more, you can research it because it's just horrifying. But so Roman Polanski, in the years after this Sharon Tate and his unborn child were killed, he just kind of spiraled out of control. And in 1977, he was arrested for basically raping a 13-year-old girl in the house of Jack Nicholson when he was like out on another film shoot or something. Like Roman Polanski was staying in his house. He brought this like 13-year-old that he had like got to model for him. And it's just this horrible story. And then he spent 42 days in jail after being arrested. And then he fled the country to avoid prosecution. And he has never, except for those 42 days in prison, he has never, you know, really had to serve any time for his crimes against that girl because he just left the country.
Wow.
And he's still, and people know, and this is like what comes up, it's like Rosemary's Baby is, you know, such an incredible movie and is so celebrated. And then it's like, and you know, this guy had this like horrific tragedy, but he also did something, he also created another horrific tragedy for somebody else. So I don't know. It's all very complicated. And the fact that he just, him and his lawyers like put out the most horrific statements about like why he wasn't guilty of rape, and it's just like sickening stuff. So yeah, that's terrible. And yeah, and so even despite, you know, Rosemary's Baby being such a famous movie, and I think it won, let's see, yeah, it says it received almost universal acclaim. Grossed over $30 million, which was a lot in 68, and they had multiple Golden Globe nominations, 2 Academy Award nominations. They won Best Supporting Actress for Ruth Gordon, and is considered one of the greatest horror films of all time, but really has this kind of like dark history around it, and like this dark shadow of Roman Polanski, who has been considered such an incredible filmmaker, but has done some like truly horrifying stuff.
Yeah, that is really, Hollywood is just a effed up place, I'll say.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And by the way, like Roman Polanski's like still working, which is also
really?
Yeah. Like he has a movie coming out or came out in 2022. Like he has continued to have a career. He just doesn't come to America.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's a crazy, yeah. I mean, all of that is such a crazy story.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's it. It's kind of short. I think, doesn't Shudder have a Cursed Films thing?
I wonder if they have one
on Rosemary's Baby.
I was going to say, I'm not sure. I watched some of them. I know there was an Exorcist one that I watched, but I can't remember all the movies. But
this one's also like most of the stuff that's like cursed about it is really just stuff that happened after the movie came out. But yeah, and then some people say like it's cursed because they like, you know, gave Satanism like a platform. And so it's like the people that made the movie, you know, let that into the world. And so this is like what they got back or whatever. But I don't know.
I know. I was just going to say, it's like, I had a conversation with somebody about John Wick, which is the same thing, which is like, you know, does seeing gun violence in movies lead to more gun violence? Or is it that we're making movies that reflect things that are happening?
What's going on in the world?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just scary. But yeah, that was so interesting. And all of that stuff is just wild. And almost it's like more, yeah, I feel like it's more scary that it's like all just like real life
horrors,
effed up stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'm going to take us to a different kind of story, which is going to our favorite, one of my favorite, I guess, topics. So I'm covering the Nure Onya, which is another Japanese yokai, which I know we've talked about before, but basically that's like a class of supernatural entities in Japanese folklore. I was reading a little bit more about them. I still am like, I don't know if people would really care about, I don't know if people would care about more, but basically it's like, they can be monsters, spirits, ghosts, phantasms, mythical creatures, all of that. So the Nure Onya is a reptilian creature, and she has the head of a woman, the body of a snake, and they are said to appear at seas or rivers, and their name actually comes from, like, it means something to do with their hair always being wet. So you'll see in some of the images, and even, you know, there's like another version that I'll talk about too. It does kind of remind me of Samora with her, you know, black,
totally
wet hair. So there are two kind of variations, main variations. And one has no arms and is basically just, you know, the snake tail part of her. And then another version does have human-like arms. The kind of interesting part about them is that their faces are hideous. So not that classic, like, luring people in with a beautiful face.
Oh, wow.
She's just ugly. But she does have serpent-like features, a forked tongue. As I said, has long black hair that sticks to her wet body, is wet hair. She's mainly pictured as being 30 feet in length, which feels pretty big to me.
30 feet?
It feels big. But there are also some versions where she's 2,070 feet long. So
I can't comprehend what that means.
I can't long. Either. I should have looked up how many football fields that is. But more going into, I feel like, Loch Ness Monster or, you know, like big sea creature territory. So, and with that big measurement, like sometimes she's described as like being so big she can go from like
She can stretch from like one town to another, which is crazy.
Wow.
But the Nereonia would appear by the sea. And this is also just like a, I feel like kind of a age old story, but she would be holding a baby and would basically like, so the first version, she's kind of like a, what am I trying to say? Like a sidekick for the Ushi Oni, which is another kind of monster that is basically an ox head, and their body is depicted as a spider with like six legs and long claws at the end of each leg. I know. I just feel like, I don't know. We don't have creatures like this.
I know. That's not fair. I want some crazier creatures in America.
Yeah, like a bull. What did I just say? An ox head with spider body?
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's crazy. So she would like be holding this baby and lure in a person and then kind of like use that or give that person to the Ushi Oni. So the person was, you'd like, she would like ask the person to hold the baby. And then they would usually, you know, look down and the baby would have turned into this heavy stone that like sunk the person down so that they would be killed and eaten by the Ushi Oni, according to legend. So it's therefore said that like to avoid this, apparently if you like were asked to hug the baby and you were wearing gloves, you could have the gloves on and then just like take off the gloves and you would be able to escape this baby rock thing that happened. Okay. To so the motives of the Nereonia are unknown. In some stories, she is a monstrous being that is powerful enough to crush trees with her tail and feeds on the humans herself. So some make it seem like, you know, she's hunting humans as like her food source. And that's like the only way she can live, sustain herself. But all of like the versions of her is that she's, you know, crafty and using trickery, luring in people with this baby bit. So some versions, as I said, she doesn't have the Ushi Oni to like whatever, that's not like she's not part of that. And so sometimes she would lure people in by just like holding this baby, crying out for fishers and sailors or anyone passing by. And in some, she could just like sit at the edge of the ocean. And that was kind of how she lured them in. Sometimes she could even use magic to change her tail into a pair of legs. And then similar to what I described before, but she would, you know, once the person came to offer to help hold the baby, it would become heavy and prevent the victim from leaving. And in that version, she used her long snake-like tongue to suck all the blood from her victim's body. So sort of vampire-y there.
Yeah.
I like this other version too. There's like another sort of telling where she only comes ashore for a purpose. And that's that like she just wants to like come, wash her hair, be left alone. And that if she's disturbed, then she becomes violent and enraged.
Well, she's just looking for a little peace and quiet. Just a little hair washing time.
She just needs some fresh water. She can't wash it in the salt water.
No.
So she would, you know, if you like, if you see her, you're supposed to just stay out of her way, let her keep doing her thing. There's one specific story I'm going to tell too. So there's an encounter with the Nereonia dating back to 1819. And it was written about in a collection of essays that was called The Discussion on Yokai Pictures. And it was written by Fujisawa Morioko. And this encounter took place on a riverside on the border of, it's Echigo province in Aizu. This is another episode of just Lauren butchering Japanese words.
You're doing great. You're doing great.
But there was a group of young men in several boats that was like going to collect wood. And one of the boats was swept away. So the men spotted a woman washing her hair in the water, and upon realizing that they were witnessing a yokai, a monster, they screamed and rowed their boats away to be reunited with the bigger group. And then the other men that were waiting for the lost boat claimed to see a large snake in the water, and those who had been swept away said, like, please go away. This is much worse than a snake. And the men kind of like laughed and were like, we see it. It's not a big deal. So they came to like help or go in the direction of the snake woman. And the men who had seen her first said like, don't come. And they started leaving. But those who did not flee were entangled by the Nureonia, and they were never seen or heard from again. So there's another kind of similar sort of creature that I wanted to talk about. So this one is called the Isoonia, and basically is in like another part of Japan. And it's kind of interesting because the, as I said, like the Nureonia is typically depicted as hideous, but the Isoonia to me like kind of reminds me more of like our stories of mermaids or sirens anything else like that, where they're very beautiful and alluring, and like her wet hair's like around her naked body.
Classic.
Yeah. Sexy. And they would not have that same like snake body, but basically it's just like a beautiful woman from the waist up. And then the waist down, her bottom half is just like nobody really knows what's going on. It's just kind of obscure, cloudy, hidden under the water. And when she's approached by humans, her bit is that she would let out a blood-curdling scream, which stuns the victim.
And then that's a good power.
Right? I kind of liked this one better. And then her hair pulls the victim into the water with just her hair.
Good. That is good. Right? I want to see a movie on that one.
So when submerged, then the yokai would, you know, suck out the person's blood. And this time through her hair, which I'm also like, wow, it's kind of powerful hair. So it does seem like these, you know, two creatures kind of came, probably from the same source or same story, and then sort of split off and had differences in kind of like, you know, how they were shared through word of mouth. So there's a what people think is like the OG yokai was the Ubeme, which dates back to the 12th century, which is like as far back as I feel like anything was written, right? I don't know. It feels like so probably long ago. But they were a ghostly form of a woman who died during childbirth, and then similar, you know, would appear to passerbys as a woman, you know, in distress, possibly with her clothes drenched in blood, possibly holding a baby in her arms. And she would look for someone to give her baby to. And when she did, she would disappear. The person would look down at the baby. It would be a bundle filled of leaves and rocks. So it seems like the Nureonia is like a localized version of this story. And that's the, where people track it back to, is like people telling the story. And this time, you know, basically just a pregnant woman who died before she could give birth, and then is forced to like live in the world of the living after that to try to find help for her and her baby, which I just feel like we see time and time again. It's so, I know we've talked about this before too, but I was just struck again by like, it just feels like so many female ghosts are like either moms or brides. Like I just feel like
totally.
It's like a common theme of like people trying to get help for their babies, or, you know, there's just like so many tropes in there too. Either like a seductress who's like using her sexualized self to bring people, you know, sailors, whatever else in, or like the older mother figure needing help for her baby.
Yeah.
It's just,
you're right,
always interesting that like across the world in all these different cultures, it's like these are, you know, such similar tropes or stories being told.
Yeah, that's true.
That's it.
That was a good one. I can't wait to see the visuals for this one in particular.
Yes, I'm
sure some cool artists online have made some, just cool versions of her.
Totally.
All right. Well, we hope you have some sweet, sweet nightmares about Rosemary's baby and giant sea creatures with hair sucking the life out of you.
Awesome. Bye.